Today we move on in this series that I'm doing on stewardship, what it means for us to be caretakers of God's creation, and how we do that in ways of generosity with one another. So as we move through this, we've been looking at this topic of stewardship and generosity from many different angles, many different ways that we see how generosity is a part of our lives, how God calls our attention to that in so many ways through Scripture. And today is no different. So today we see this story that comes from the Gospel of Mark. I'll be reading from Mark chapter 12, towards the end of that chapter, beginning at verse 38. And these are actually two stories that go back to back. And Mark puts them together in a ways where they are connected. And we're going to see that connection between these two stories as we go through it. Okay? So, Mark chapter 12, beginning at verse 38, where the gospel writer Mark says this. As he taught, Jesus said, "Watch out for the teachers of the law. They like to walk around in flowing robes and be greeted with respect in the marketplaces and have the most important seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at banquets. They devour widows' houses and for a show make lengthy prayers. These men will be punished most severely." Then Jesus sat down opposite the place where the offerings were put and watched the crowd putting their money into the temple treasury. Many rich people came and threw in large amounts, but a poor widow came and put in two very small copper coins worth only a few cents. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, "Truly, I tell you, this poor widow has put more into the treasury than all of the others. They all gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all she had to live on." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So today, in this story, we're going to talk a little bit about status, what it means for a person to have status. And we use that word in many different ways when we think about status and what status means. For example, if I were to go out and buy a used automobile, and yeah, the cars I drive tend to be older cars, so when I get a used automobile, one of the things that you always do when you look for a used car is you inquire about the status of that car. What's its status? Meaning, well, what works, what doesn't, what work has it been had done, what's in repair, what needs to be repaired, how does it run? All of these questions are questions of status. How does it work? What's happened to it, right? So we use status to think about that. But we use status in other ways as well. For example, if you have some health issues and you go to the doctor and you have a variety of medical tests that are done, sometimes you want to know the results of that quickly. So maybe you call the doctor's office and saying, I'm just looking for a status. Status on those medical tests that I have done, you can just tell me where it's at. We want to know the results. Give me an update. Where is it at? That kind of a thing. Sometimes we use status in the business world if you work with a team on a project, right? So you're working on this project and you divide many parts of that out of this project and you want a status. Where's the status of our project? What's the process? Where are we at? You want to know where the status of that is. We use status in many ways like that. We also, in the older days of Facebook, the early days, before they called it posting, which it is now, right? When you put something on Facebook, like some words or a photo or something like that, and you post that, back in the early days, they called that a status update, that you put your status in there. How are you doing? What are you up to? What do you think? Different ways that we think about status. Now, more correctly, when we talk about status with people, in particular with people, we're referring to something a little more specific. We're referring more to a person's position or their standing when we talk about people in status. For example, if you talk about somebody's job status, it means how are they doing at, what are they doing at work in their position, their standing, right? What have they been promoted? Where are they in that chain of command with their job status in that way? Or for military service people, when you think about their status, you're talking about, well, what's their rank? Their rank in the military. When you think of status that way, it's about position and standing. It's about in comparison with other people, where are you at in your position and your standing in that? Those are ways that we think about status. All right, I want us to get a clear picture of that because I'm going to be referring to that in how this story takes shape. It is a story about generosity, sure, but I think even more prominent than that, this is a story about status. And those two things are connected. So as we think about stewardship and generosity and what it means for us to be giving and generous people, this is a story that also makes us think about how status is connected with generosity, with what it means for us to be giving people. So we look at how that takes place. Jesus tells the stories, and he begins with a story like this where he's giving a teaching about these teachers of the law. Right, these people who walk around in flowing robes and they seek the seats of honor at banquets and gatherings and in their synagogues. Flowing robes and seats of honor. All right, we don't really use things like that anymore as markers or indicators of status. We have other things that we use for that. But in those days, that's what Jesus is calling out. He's calling out essentially status symbols. That's a term that we're familiar with, right? Status symbols. So he's pointing out some of the common status symbols of his time. These people that would walk around in these long flowing robes and sit in the important seats at the gatherings. Well, we have status symbols today yet too, right? So our equivalent today of maybe walking around in a long flowing robe is, I don't know, driving a Lamborghini or a Ferrari. Something like that. Something which intentionally has the point of saying, look at me. Look at me. Or status symbols that you've arrived at some kind of position of prominence or importance or wealth. If I have a seaside mansion estate somewhere on the coast, you know, that is a symbol of status, that I've arrived at a certain position or ranking among other people. We have status symbols yet today. Or maybe a way that we could refer to them is trophy cases. Places in our lives where we display for others what it is we've done, what we've accomplished. Ways that we say for other people, look at how important I am at what I've done and what I've accomplished. We all have these things in some ways. All right, I'll go first then. Maybe for me, you know, I'm pretty quick to put on my Spartan socks the day after a win. And I'll wear those and wear those with a little bit of pride of, yep, I'm a Michigan State Spartan fan. But the day after a loss, yeah, they tend to stay in the drawer, right? Then they don't go on. That tells me something, or at least it should tell me something, right? This is about a status. A symbol of status at some point. Or consider this, that in the time when I went to seminary for my seminary training, that was at a time when the seminary was intentionally trying to transition to more electronic resources, that we would use computers more and more often in the work that we would do there. So as a result of that, probably 3/4 of my theological library is on the hard drive of my computer. Not actual print books that I bought and own, but they're all electronic books that I have on my computer that way. The result of that is this, that I have some colleagues that when we all graduated seminary and would get those first calls and go to churches, and churches, often they have a pastor's office or a pastor's study where it's just walls of bookshelves. Because there was a day when, yep, you bought all those books and you had that. I have some colleagues then that in their first call would go to try to find giveaways like free books or used books or pastors who are retiring and getting rid of their collection and say, I'm just going to try to snatch up as many books as I can. Not because I have any intention of ever reading them, but I've got all these empty bookshelves in my office and I have to fill them and put something on them. I need a symbol of status that when people walk in that room, they look and they say, look how smart this guy is. Look at how much he's read all the books that are there. When in fact, you know what? I haven't read any of those books. I've just bought those to fill the space. Now, all right, it's not that we techno pastors didn't do the reading. It's just that it all lives on a computer and not on the shelves in our offices. But still something inside drives us to say, but I want to make a show of how smart I am, how much I've studied and learned and know. We do that. All right, so those are maybe some of the things that run in and out of my world and what I live in. But let's be honest today, okay? Every single one of us, every one of us has trophy cases in our lives, somehow, somewhere. No matter who you are, no matter what you do, no matter where you've been, there are always those places in every single one of our lives where we have some things that we set up as symbols, and they are there to say, look at me. Look at how important I am. Look at what I've accomplished. Look at what I've done. We all have those in some places of our lives, don't we? We all have those symbols that are there. So the question, as we run through this story and we see Jesus giving this teaching today, the question that maybe we need to start with is, what does that look like in my life? What are my status symbols? You see, because I don't know that we can really get on to unpacking this lesson about generosity that comes next until we do the hard work first of looking in the mirror. And really, that's what it is. Because you know what, as I talk about this and give some examples of that, maybe the first thing that you do in your mind, because as I began preparing for this, that's how it worked in my mind, the first thing is you start thinking about other people. Yeah, I see other people doing this all the time. I see those other people who show their status symbols and make a show of their trophy cases, but you know what, this isn't really going to get us to the lesson that means something for us until we come all the way around and say, you know, I need to look in the mirror. I need to be honest about where this shows up in my own life. So what is that? For all of us here today, as we think about that, what are the status symbols, the trophy cases, the places where we've set up some own things in our own lives that seem to have no greater purpose or function than to simply say, look at me. Look at how important I am. You know, and I've tried to maybe justify and explain away other things. Well, you know, I just do that for fun, or that's just a part of my life or who I am. Or we try to justify that, but when it comes down to it, there are places in every one of our lives where we have some things that just say, look at me. Look at me. Why do we do that? Right? Why are we people who do that? Who try to set up these trophy cases and make shows of things like that? Why are we people who pursue status? That's a question that really comes out of this story. If every single one of us connects to that in some way, and we all do, we all do this in some way. Why? What's pushing us to that? What drives that? Because somewhere inside every single one of us, there's this desire that we all share, right? A desire to be known, to be loved, to be adored. Every single one of us has that. You cannot deny that. Nobody who lives on this earth can deny that every single person somewhere at some point in their lives deep inside carries and has a desire to be known, recognized, loved, adored, accepted. We drive ourselves to set up symbols of status and position and standing because we're driven by that desire, aren't we? That we simply want people to know us and recognize us and love us and adore us in some way. And is that wrong? Is that a bad thing? If we're all made that way? You know, because at some point, these are things that come from our Creator. You go back Genesis 1 and 2 before the fall into sin, and Adam and Eve, those first people made by God, they enjoyed a perfect relationship with their Creator. A relationship with their Creator, a relationship in which they were, see this now, known by God perfectly. A relationship in which they were loved by God perfectly. And a relationship in which they were affectionately adored by their Creator, that God delights in His people perfectly. That was a perfect relationship which affirmed for them status. A status that says, you know what, you are known, you are loved, you are adored by your God, the one who has created you, the one who has made you. And then we fell into sin. And in a world that is broken and shattered by sin, we, you and I, we are still people who have those longings, aren't we? We are still people who hold those desires to be known and to be loved and to be adored, but in our sinful, broken world, we often start turning to look for the fulfillment of that desire apart from God, don't we? That's what we do. That in our desire to be known and to be loved and to be adored, we start looking for all of these other places outside of our Creator to find that recognition, to find that love, to find that adoration, to find that acceptance. And when we do that, we pursue status symbols. You see where it all comes from now then. You see what drives that? Our push and our desire to find status symbols in our own lives. It is simply trying to fulfill a desire that God has placed within each one of us to be in a perfect relationship with Him, our Creator. And we start looking sideways and all over for where else we can find that. So maybe today it's time for a status update. It's time to update where our status lies, where it comes from. Because in every single one of us, as I said, we all have trophy cases of some kind. We all have status symbols that we're going after in some way and trying to hold up in some way. We all have those different things in our lives and in different places where we hold those things up to say, look at me. Look how important I am. And maybe today, before we can really dig into understanding where generosity hits its maximum flow for us, is to come in confession and say, you know what? I need to start with a status update. I need to start by recognizing and remembering again that my status as one who is known and loved and adored is a status that is held in God. My status symbol is the cross. The cross is the symbol of my status, of who I am as someone who's known and loved and adored by God. Because it is through the cross that I am again restored to that relationship with my Creator. I need to begin with that status update, to return again to recognizing and remembering where my status really belongs. And recognizing all those times and those places where it seems like I'm looking for status in other ways to pull that up. Now then, Jesus moves on to another scene. There's another story that takes place here. Jesus is sitting in the temple courts. We can gain something of this. Let me explain how this goes and how the temple is set up. So Jesus is sitting in what is likely called the court of the women, the outer courts of the temple. This was the place in the temple where people would give their monetary gifts, their offerings that way, for the temple treasury. So this is not the place where they do sacrifices, the burnt offerings and that kind of thing. This is simply the place where they would give money for the treasury. Money for the treasury that would be used for temple purposes, right? For the maintaining of the temple. It's how the priests, the Levites who were there would gain their support and make their living. In fact, it is likely that those teachers of the law, who Jesus is so harshly rebuking, gained at least a portion of their extravagant wealth through these temple offerings. that they would take some of that for themselves through that. So this is where Jesus is sitting, watching this take place. The way this would happen in the temple arrangement of that day is they had what were called shofar chests. Shofar is the Jewish reference to a ram's horn. So it's the ram's horn that they would hollow out on the ends, and they would use it as a trumpet. So they would blow it and make noise as a trumpet. That would be the shofar. They had 13 of these shofar chests made out of bronze, and they were large, kind of like a trumpet or a horn that way. And people would put their offerings, their money, into those as they went by. There were 13 of them scattered around the temple courts. So wherever you were coming in, you could go buy these. So picture that now. Jesus is sitting in the temple courts. These 13 large bronze horn, ram's horn trumpet-shaped receptacles are all around. And people go by and put their money into it. Now, there was no online giving back then. It couldn't go that way. There was no paper money. Couldn't write checks or have bills or that. The only money there were coins. Metal coins made of precious metals. So the only way that people would give or exchange money in that time were through coins of various sizes and made out of different metals. Didn't have the same kind of values that we assign to our coins today. Because you think of our coins, you know, I think the smallest of our coins is probably a dime, right, in size. But in those days, the monetary value of a coin would go up as the size went up. So, picture that now. Jesus is sitting there in the temple courts. All of these 13 bronze horn trumpets are around there. People are walking by and they're throwing their money in. Coins. It's loud, right? It makes noise. Somehow that seems to be the point of all of this. And so for those who have lots of coins, big coins, heavy coins, they would come in with their offerings and they would dump those things in and it would make noise, a lot of noise. It becomes, for some of these people, a status symbol. A symbol that others would not only see, but they would hear it. Right? So picture that. That Jesus is sitting in the temple courts and you hear from all over the place these clinkings and clankings and clatterings coming from all over the place. And whenever somebody would dump in a large amount, it would make this huge racket and everybody turns and looks. See that? Look at that. Look at me. Look at how important I am. They would see it and hear it. That's the scene that's taking place here with these 13 shofar chests that Jesus is watching. And then a woman comes, a poor widow, and she has two copper coins worth only about 2 cents, just a few pennies, and she drops those in, just these few pennies that she has. And don't think of them as being pennies like we have pennies. I mean, these are coins that are probably so thin you could bend them with your hands if you tried hard enough. They're small. They're light. They're insignificant. You would drop those in there and it would barely make a little clinking sound as it would go in. Jesus sees that take place and that's where he stops the scene and calls this one out. Gets his disciples gathered up and he says, wait, I want you to see this. I want you to recognize what has just taken place here, what has just happened with this woman who went by and dropped these few coins in and nobody noticed, nobody saw, hardly made any noise at all in the distraction of all the other noises going on. But Jesus takes this one woman and takes her and calls her up and elevates her to the position of saying she has given more than any of these others. Even though it's only a few cents that have gone in there. You see what's happening in this story. Jesus is making a connection here, a connection between generosity and status. Status. That there is a shift of legacy taking place here. You see, because for this woman, she had nothing else to give but what she had. She lives in a position where she's not giving out of her extravagance, but she's giving all that she has. And she recognizes that all that she has comes to her as a gift from God. That's why she's able to give it, because it's a gift from God. She comes in a place where she recognizes that her own status is a person who is loved for and cared for by God. And because she recognizes that status of who she is in her life, she is able to be generous out of that. She is able to give from that place of knowing, remembering, recognizing that she is loved, she is known, she is cared for, she is adored by her God. She knows that. And so she is able to give from that. Jesus calls that out. That's what he's calling out here. That she is giving from a place of generosity that follows, that flows from her status. And it's a shift of legacy. Legacy. Legacy is one of those words that we use to describe what follows our example. Right, so we live lives that leave an example in some way, and what follows the example that we leave is what we refer to as a legacy. Now, to be clear, everybody leaves a legacy. Every single person leaves a legacy behind because every single person leaves an example of some kind. We all do. So it's not a question of whether or not you leave a legacy. It's a question of what kind of legacy are you leaving? What kind of example am I setting through my life? So what kind of legacy am I leaving through that? This woman is giving a shift of legacies here in the way that she's generous, in the way that she gives. You see, because what she's essentially doing is, in this small gift, she's hiding her own legacy. But she's hiding her own legacy in a way where it is hidden in God's legacy, right? Because she knows, she recognizes, she remembers that her own status resides with God. And because her status resides with God, then her legacy, her example is also hidden inside of the legacy of God. And so that God's legacy then rises to the front, rises to the top of that. By hiding her own legacy inside of God's legacy. It is God's legacy that shows up, that is noticed, that is visible. And so in this way, when she recognizes that her status is bound up inside of God's legacy, in this way, when she gives that way, it's an extension of God's gift. That her love becomes an extension of God's love. That her care and concern for others becomes an extension of God's care and concern for others. That her generosity becomes an extension of God's generosity. See how that works here? You see how that works? That her legacy is hidden inside of God's legacy. Do you see it? I have a friend who's a pastor as well, and there is an individual in this church who lived a rather ordinary life, an individual who lived in an ordinary house with old functioning appliances, nothing flashy or fancy, you know, no custom granite countertops, no vaulted ceilings, anything like that. Just seemed to be ordinary. But this was an individual who was generous in other ways. So when a need arose in that church with another family, a sudden need in this family that needed support, that here was an individual who stepped up and said, I'm going to benevolently give for the need of this other family. And so the way that it happened was that this individual would put some money in an envelope and bring it to the pastor. And the pastor would then anonymously pass it along to this family. And we're not talking about a couple of 20s here. I mean, this is hundreds of dollars, an envelope with hundreds of dollars in it. And this was a practice that was repeated as the need extended and went on and on, that there was an individual who every so often would hand an envelope filled with hundreds of dollars to the pastor, entrusting the pastor to anonymously pass that along to this other family. So the family, of course, as they keep receiving this, they want to know so that they can say thank you. Who do we thank for this? Who is it that we can write a card to or a note to or call or in some way express our gratitude, because we would all want to do that, right? But it was anonymous. They never knew. And maybe that's the point. Because in the absence of anyone else to thank, where does our gratitude go? Well, just thank God, all right? Thank God for this provision that comes in the generosity that's expressed here. That even though you want to thank this as being a gift that came from someone, from an individual somewhere, but instead, all I can do is thank God for this gift, for this provision. You see how that works? That this generosity is hidden inside of the generosity of God. This legacy of an individual who no one would otherwise know is hidden inside of the legacy of God. And it's all based upon status. A recognition of our status, of one who is known, loved, and adored by our God. And that is who we are. Children of God. That is your status. And when I can be an extension of His love, His care, His generosity, through that status, then I live a legacy hidden inside of the legacy of God. Let's pray together. God, thank you for the gift of your word. Thank you for the reminder today that we do have a status that comes from you and resides in you. God, thank you today that we are people who live in the benefit of that. So God, we have to confess and say that we're sorry for all the times that we have chased after our own trophy cases and our own status symbols. God, we have to say sorry for all the times that we've come before you and pushed you aside, looking for other ways to be known and to be loved and to be adored. Remind us again today, Lord, that our status is connected to you through the symbol of the cross. That all that we ever need to be known and loved and adored, delighted in, comes from you. And God, may our extensions of love and care and generosity flow from that status in ways in which our legacy becomes hidden in your legacy. I pray this in the name of Jesus. Amen.